Welcome back in. Radio 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you. We usually talk to our friend Natalie Compton from the Washington Post, By the Way, Concierge Travel Service. You can find it bytheway.com. She is getting a rest tonight. We're going to go to one of our other old friends, Hannah Sampson, who's another travel writer at By the Way. Hey, Hannah, how are you?
Hey, Matt. I'm doing well.
It's good
to talk to you.
It's good to have you back. Last time we chatted, early on in the pandemic, I'm getting older, but if I recall correctly, you were not far away from having a baby, and one of the frustrations, if it were, and I apologize if I overstate that, with the whole pandemic and the lack of travel was you are a big Disney fan. You like going to Disney World, and you're all excited, you're having a baby, you want to go to Disney World, and that stuff just wasn't happening for a while. Now, fast forward like 10, 11 months later, how old is baby?
Baby is 11 months.
11 months old. So a lot of princesses to meet in Disney World. But you know what's funny, Hannah? Is at the age of 11 months, if everything was completely cool, would you guys have already gone to Disney?
You know, we were going to go, we were going to go in November. So yeah, we had plans to go in November when she would have been a few months old. And that was for some sporting event that would have been there. But it was all going to be like one trip.
Sure. Because at what age is it when the trip to Disney World becomes about the children and not the parents? I'm guessing it's not below the age of two, right? Because they're not going to remember that. They're going to have great pictures, and you're going to love seeing them there with the princesses and stuff. But I wonder, like, what the line is where this is truly a trip for the kids, not a trip for the parents.
I honestly don't know, because I've gone with nieces and nephews when they were pretty young, and I think it was still about the parents. And in that case, it was also about the auntie,
yes.
Who was very excited. We've been doing a lot of national parks in the baby's young life. So that's been a good experience. She won't remember
yeah.
the national park, but it's a priority. It's been a priority for me and for her dad. So we're trying to start that habit pretty early, and we've knocked off three so far. So we're pretty happy about that. And, you know, there's a lot of time left to do all of the parks, all of the parks in the world,
for sure.
All the Disney parks and all the national parks. So we're hoping to form those travel habits early with her.
The crazy thing to think about is we talk about all these kids who've, you know, gone through virtual learning or missed graduations and proms or all of these things. Your daughter, if you know, theoretically things keep going well and progressing like they seem to be, she's going to have lived through this crazy thing and really have no knowledge or memory of it.
And we've been so grateful for that, honestly, since she was born. Like, it was very hard not to have her grandparents be able to be with us in the early days and to help us, frankly. But she doesn't know. Like, all she knew was that somebody was taking care of her. And
yeah.
She's never going to have a memory of being locked down and not being able to go into a store. She's still really, I mean, we've never taken her to like a Starbucks or anything. I can't wait for the day when things are normal enough when I can just run an errand with her.
Yeah.
But luckily she won't remember that. And I am very grateful.
And like, didn't even really miss out, you know, at maybe 3, 4, 5 years old, you're at least going on play dates or trying to, you know, get them around other kids and used to all these things. And you're lucky enough that it was an age where you wouldn't have done a ton of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recommend really, you know, a pregnancy and
a birth
in a pandemic. but if it had to happen, then you know, there's a silver lining to having that experience, and it is that we missed out on things as her parents, but she did not.
What was the toughest part of being pregnant during a pandemic? I imagine doctor's visits were much more difficult than they would have been. What else really like made you think, ugh, I'd rather do this without a pandemic?
Oh, man. You know, there was just a lot of stress. Like, we didn't know how bad it could be if I got sick. We
yeah.
just knew I didn't want to get sick because I wanted my husband to be able to be at the hospital with me. So we were incredibly careful for, like, weeks and weeks and weeks leading up to when I was due, because we wanted to know that we could both be at the hospital together. And we, you know, I didn't know if there would be complications. So there was that, but then there was also the not knowing. Like, we didn't know that there was going to be a vaccine when the baby was born or when. People were talking about it could be years. So just that not knowing when we would be able to see family but knowing we would spend these early days without family was, I mean, there was a lot of heartbreak. There was a lot of family, there are a lot of difficult things going on with people in my family and with illnesses and things that I really would have wanted to be around my family for, and I couldn't. So it was very isolating and lonely, and just there was so many question marks that it really felt like I didn't know where there was light at the end of the tunnel. It just seemed like dark for a long time. In retrospect, you know, luckily we all made it through, and nobody got seriously sick from COVID, and we've been able to see all of our family since. So we really were very fortunate, but we didn't know that at the time. So it was really hard to look forward and see what we had to look forward to.
I can only imagine the sleepless nights that you had, especially early on when we really did not know exactly what was going on. It did take a while, you know, as we recall, to figure out what this was. Would there ever be a vaccine? You know, Everything did seem awfully, it's funny to remember now how bleak things really seemed for a while. Like, wow, is this, I remember the first month or two, kind of like, boy, this is different. We'll always remember this. Then you get to month three and four and we started thinking, oh, this is an ending. You know, we were preparing for the first 2 weeks, for the first 2 months, but now it's like, okay, this is a way of life. And summer came and summer was ruined. And here we are a year later. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is wild. It's wild how fast it's gone.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, you just wait. Now that you have a baby, time starts going in fast forward motion. So enjoy every moment as you can. And that is not always easy to do. Just remember that too. There'll be moments you're so mad at yourself for not cherishing every minute, and it's impossible to cherish every minute because life gets in the way of that. But I'm so happy for you and excited that you guys have a baby that you can take to Disney. Now you have your excuse. People won't look at you weird, like, why are you going to Disney World? No, I have a baby. I have to take the baby to Disney World. This is why I go to Disney World. It's not about us.
Everyone who knows us knows that that is not our excuse.
So Hannah Sampson is on with us. She's a travel reporter for the Washington Post, by the way, concierge travel service at bytheway.com. So I wanted to get Hannah on because she wrote an article this past week about the terror in the skies. We saw the video of this poor Southwest Airlines flight attendant getting punched and teeth knocked out. Delta Airlines, I was joking on the show last week, Hannah. Delta Airlines, to me, is the genteel airline. Like, if things start going wrong on Delta, you know that society is crumbling because you never hear about, you know, here in Chicago, people are getting dragged off United flights by the police and things like Southwest is, you know, kind of like people of Southwest, I think, sort of relates to it sometimes. But Delta, if Delta has problems, where do we go from here?
You know, I don't think anybody is emerging unscathed from this kind of rash of unruly passengers or disruptive behavior, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, Delta had their incident, I think it was last week, where someone was banging on the door of the cockpit and saying, stop the plane, and the flight attendant really had to like physically get involved, and this guy was like tied up and dragged to the back of the plane. It was pretty out there, and that's just one example of like hundreds, even like thousands of an extreme example, but one example of thousands of cases that have been reported to the FAA just this year, not in, you know, just in 2021.
All right, so why is this happening is the question. We got to take a quick break. More with Hannah Sampson from the Washington Post next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala back with Hannah Sampson from the Washington Post. Visit her at bytheway.com. You can see her articles and our friend Natalie Compton's articles and other articles by the great staff of travel writers for the Washington Post. You can also visit Hannah on Twitter. She's a great follow there at Hannah B. Sampson. Hannah, even though I like to say Hannah as in Donna, she taught me, and now I'm trying to get it right. So what is the story, though? Is it just this pent-up frustration, or now we're getting back in the air and we don't know what to do? Like, why do you think suddenly it's this bad? You'd think we'd be kinder to people, or more like, I'm so happy to be on a plane, I'll be good, I'll do whatever you ask. But no.
No, I think some people do feel that way. In fact, Natalie, I think, has had kind of that feeling when she's been flying again. But for the most part, so of those, I think it's the FAA told us this week there were 2,900 reports of unruly passenger behavior this year. Of those, 2,200 involved people who wouldn't comply with the federal mask mandate.
Sure.
So big part of it is people who are resistant to wearing a mask, who resent being told to wear a mask, who have their own feelings about the effectiveness of masks, and that just really seems to be escalating on planes. But there's also the fact, you know, just that so many people, like all of us, have been cooped up. There's a lot of kind of tension about being close to people. And of course, on a plane, you're close to a lot of people. So that kind of puts the stress level higher. And then somebody pointed out to me for the story that they were already seeing a lot of anger in the air as, you know, seats have gotten smaller. People have been closer together. You're stressed out about all the things you had to pay for, and there's no room for your overhead bags, and the people up front are, you know, sitting pretty in their more expensive seats. So there's all this kind of underlying frustration in flying. And when you mask mandate and kind of all the very strong feelings that people have about that into the mix, it appears to just kind of be boiling over into the kind of behavior that we've been seeing recently.
I've talked about this quite a bit, but I am frustrated with the CDC over how quickly suddenly the mask mandates are gone. Now, I know that they still want people wearing them on airplanes, but the airlines have to be frustrated because they're dealing with people who are all ticked off because they're hearing, well, we don't need the mask now, we don't need the mask. And the airlines will tell you over and over again that the cleanest air you're going to breathe, at least they will claim, is on an airplane. That it's got these crazy filters and it's circulated every 2.4 seconds. And, da, 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 da. And, you know, I've heard other people say the real danger at an airport is not probably on the plane. It's the 500 people gathered to get on a plane for half an hour waiting for, boarding group one, boarding group two, and all of those things, and the bathrooms there and everything else in the airport. So everybody's kind of in a tough situation. And honestly, I just wish the CDC would have said, yeah, we probably could go without these. Well, why don't we get the country to 60-70% and then we ease up on that?
And somebody, the president of the flight attendant union actually told me they had a very difficult week when the CDC changed its mask guidance for like outdoors and for vaccinated people. People on planes were like, well, look, the CDC says I don't have to wear a mask. Why are you telling me I do have to wear a mask? I mean, in fact, the CDC said you still do have to wear a mask on planes, and the TSA says you still do have to wear a mask on planes. But there is that kind of mixed messaging, and it does give a little more fodder to people who don't want to wear a mask because they're saying, like, I don't have to wear it to the grocery store anymore, so why do I have to wear it in this scenario?
Yeah,
it's tough. It's a little bit, I guess, of mixed messaging. So that doesn't make it any easier in the skies.
The funny thing is, I think the people most likely to wear the mask or be willing to are the people that have been vaccinated.
Speaking from experience as a vaccinated person who still like wears a mask at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I guess we'll keep monitoring that and see how things. Hopefully, things will lighten up. Hopefully, we'll get a little more used to being back in the air and what the new regulations are. I imagine that when we first had to take off our shoes at the airport and take off our belts and stuff, I know we were still in that post 9/11 era, but I wonder if they had a real uptick in problems at that time too, with people just didn't get, why do I have to do this? Why would I take my shoes off? What is the point of that? I mean, I guess Richard Reed was a pretty well-known name, so maybe people got it, but I bet they had an uptick in problems then too.
Yeah, somebody pointed out to me that whenever there are surges in air traffic, there are also surges in kind of air rage events. So this isn't the first time there's been a kind of spate of bad incidents of disruptive passengers. I think this is exaggerated. It's a lot more than it has been before, but we certainly have had like shocks to the transportation system and had to change our behavior, and that's always stressful. So, you know, in this case, I don't know how many of these changes will be permanent. Probably, I mean, masks will go away at some point, probably. Maybe even this year, that the deadline right now or the sunset date is September 13th, and we'll see if they extend that. Yeah. But, you know, this is still, I think people are just still getting used to being back out there, and it's just very stressful.
For sure.
In every way.
I only have a couple of minutes left, but let me ask you about the cruise industry, because I know you've been writing about that too, and I believe I saw a story this week that there was a cruise of fully vaccinated people where two people tested positive for COVID. So that's not a confidence builder.
So I guess the bad thing is that, you know, people had to be tested before they got on this cruise. They had to be vaccinated if they were over 16, and the vast, vast majority were. But somehow a couple of people still tested positive in testing that they had to do because it was required by the port they were going back to. So they were not symptomatic. It wasn't like they were sick. They were infected, though. So it's not great. But on the other hand, they tested a bunch of people who were close contacts of those two, and nobody else tested positive. So that's a good thing. And that's despite the fact that on the cruise, nobody had to wear a mask because it was essentially fully vaccinated. So, you know, breakthrough cases are possible. And yeah. I think it was expected that it would happen on a cruise, but this is the first, this was really like the first ship sailing for Americans in the Caribbean. And so I'm sure it is not a headline that anybody in the cruise industry wanted. Yeah, it's not ideal.
It is not. And the cruise industry is, you know, they suffered worse than anyone in some of these towns. We know Alaska suffered so greatly from this whole thing. So hopefully they can figure out a way to, you know, cruise people want to cruise, so they're going to want to come back. They just got to figure a way to make sure that the headlines are good and that people can stay healthy. Hannah Sampson writes for the Washington Post. Go to bytheway.com or find them at washingtonpost.com. And you can find her on Twitter at Hannah B. Sampson. And she's a great follow there. Hannah, it's always great to talk to you, and I can't wait to hear about your first Disney visit sometime soon.
Thank you so much. Good to talk to you, Matt.
That's it for us, everybody. I'm Matt Bubala. I'll be back with you next week at 10 p.m. Right now, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.